Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, and I'm your host. The mission in my work is to empower people to manifest their values of compassion and wellness in their everyday lives, and you can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, joyfulvegan.com. Hi, everyone. Good morning. First and foremost, I am thrilled to tell you, I mean, this isn't even the official announcement, but I want to tell you, all of my podcast listeners, that the 30-Day Vegan Challenge New Edition is technically here. This has been an incredibly difficult and long and hard process, especially the coming out of the book, and I'll explain another time. Nothing bad. I mean, all good stuff, but just really, really, really laborious and wonderful at the same time. I imagine it's like childbirth, and that's exactly what this has been. I kind of have joked in the past that all of my books are like birthing children, and this one is probably the most like it because I'm in charge of everything. And of course, with the other books, I wasn't. And so this has been pretty intense in terms of getting distribution, you know, spreading the word, getting marketing. I'm the editorial director, I'm the art director, and the head of everything. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of decisions to be made, and some things have happened that have been out of my control, which happens. And it's been pretty intense. The most intense part of the process, to be honest, has been filling the Indiegogo orders and just getting all of those squared away. And we're kind of starting to do it now. I'm nervous that there's going to be returns because people didn't give me their new address, and there's just going to be things out of my control again, which I'm not very good at. When things aren't in my control. So I just have to let go and just trust it's all going to be fine. But the good news is that the book is here. I don't even have a physical copy of the hardcover in my hands yet, which is a little frustrating for me. But I do know it's up on Amazon. It will be available very soon. And it's up on my website. You can buy signed copies. And as soon as they're available, they'll be sent to you, which is really soon, in the next week or so. So it's very exciting. And if you go to joyfulvegan.com, you can get signed copies of the book. And not only that, Kindle versions of the book are on Amazon.com and Nook versions are on Barnes & Noble. So you can get the ebook now. I'm working on getting it up on Google Play and the iBook as well on iTunes. So it is there. I mean, it's really there for you to purchase now. And as this book starts to trickle into the world, and you're going to hear me say this more than once, I cannot emphasize enough how important word of mouth is, and reviews on Amazon and posts on your blogs and Facebook pages. And so to help you with that, we've got some graphics up on my website at joyfulvegan.com. Go to the book, you know, just click on the image of the book and you'll get to the 30-Day Vegan Challenge page for the book. And you can grab any of those images of the book. We have just lots of different graphics and sizes for you to put up online, up on your website, and keep it there on the sidebar and encourage people to buy it. And so, of course, I'm going to have more to say to you when the book is officially out, which is in January 1st. But it is in the world, and I'm so grateful, and I'm so proud of this book. I just cannot wait to hear what you think. And as I said, please post those hopefully positive reviews up on Amazon and on your site. I think you're going to be as thrilled as I am. I think you're going to just really be blown away. That's my hope. And of course, you know about the trip to Italy. It is almost half full. I think it's half full. Yesterday, I just got an email about a couple more people who signed up. So you want to go to joyfulvegan.com for the details and how to sign up. And you're going to want to do so ASAP if you want to join me in Italy in June of 2015. And then, of course, there's the Holistic Holiday at Sea Cruise. So if you want to join me in the Caribbean, I'm going to be doing that next year as well. That's in March 2015. And you can also find that at joyfulvegan.com at the events tab. And of course, I'm so grateful to all of you supporters out there, all of you who are supporting me either through one-time donations or through Patreon. If you listen to this podcast and you get anything out of it at all, if it moves you, if it helps you, if it informs you, if you've ever passed it on, if you've ever shared it, if you've ever quoted it, please know that every penny goes into this work. And so if you can support me, I can keep doing this. So you can go to joyfulvegan.com and you can choose to make either a one-time donation or become a patron, which is monthly, and you can contribute in someone else's name too. So consider that, especially for the holidays. Thank you to new gold members, Robin Hemingway, and to Tran. We don't have a last name, but Tran is the name we have. Thank you, Tran. and to Platinum members, Tim Anderson, Tim, who just renewed his Platinum membership for the year. So thank you, Tim, and David Cabrera, Alexander Gray, Valentina Zenkel, and Eric and Peter of Peace Food Cafe in New York City. And of course, I love hearing from you. You know that. I get so many letters from you, and I am so moved and so touched. And really, they mean everything to me. So I don't take them lightly. I read every one. And luckily, I have Bridie Reed, who's able to respond to the letters. And then, of course, when I'm able, I'm including your questions and my answers in the What Would Colleen Do segment of the podcast. But here's just a sweet thank you letter. Lauren also had a question, which we'll be answering, but here's just the first part of her email saying, like so many others who've contacted you before, I first want to express my thanks to you for being a tireless advocate for the animals and for changing so many lives with your words, both written and spoken, your activism and your delicious recipes. When I first started listening to your podcast back in the spring of 2013, I was a lacto-ovo-vegetarian and I had no intention of quote unquote going vegan. I felt that veganism was needlessly restrictive, but soon realized that I didn't have the full story. I binge listened to every one of your podcasts during my daily commute, and within a month, I decided to give up dairy products and eggs for good. Soon thereafter, purchased all of your books and haven't looked back since. Veganism has been such an unexpected joy in my life. I have never been healthier, happier, and more at peace. That sounds familiar. I think we can all relate to that. I now know that this is the life I've always meant to live as a true lover of animals and someone who's deeply passionate about health and wellness. So thank you for shining the light on this wonderful path. I'm a monthly patron of your work and consider it money very well spent. Thank you so much, Lauren. Thank you so much for your support and for your incredibly kind words, words that we can all identify with, I'm sure. And we'll be answering your question as well, so just be patient with me. And we have another letter from Robin. Hi, Colleen. Just a short note. Love your message, inspiration, and dedication. Thank you. I wanted to know if every podcast you've ever done is available here on your website and also on podcast players. I'm recent to the podcast world, and I've come to realize that not all podcast players display your podcast the same. It's also not easy to find you by just typing vegan in the search bar, depending on the podcast player. So that's unfortunate. So that is from Robin Hemingway. Thank you, Robin. And I believe we've answered you via email, but it's a question that I think other people might get something out of, the answer out of. Definitely SoundCloud is really probably the best way to listen to the podcast on your computer. I think SoundCloud also has an app. I'm sure it has an app. And it's also subscription-based. So it's not subscription-based like a feed, like a podcast feed, but kind of. I mean, so you would follow me on SoundCloud and then you would get notices when new episodes were released, but certainly the best way is through iTunes and Stitcher. Those are the big ones I know where you can subscribe to the feed and you're alerted and it shows up every time you're refreshing your feed. And certainly please leave a review over on those places as well. And I imagine that I come up when you type in vegan, their search capacity is different than it used to be. Whenever I post a new episode in iTunes, they say that they're not using keywords anymore. So it really depends on the name of the podcast itself, the title, and then the title you're giving the episodes. So I need to kind of get vegan in there in the title of every episode because that's what iTunes is using as keywords these days. So constantly have to stay on top of these things. It's just crazy. But thank you, Robin. Thank you so much for wanting to make it easier for people to find the podcast, certainly. Now, of course, thank you so much to AAVS, American Anti-Vivisection Society, for being a sponsor of today's podcast, along with all of you listeners out there. AAVS, which is at aavs.org, is one of the oldest animal protection organizations in the United States. Go read, please go read Diane Beer's book, For the Prevention of Cruelty. It's the history of the animal protection movement in the United States, and you're going to read all about AAVS, which was first part of, I believe it was the Philadelphia SPCA, if I understand correctly, if I'm remembering correctly. And it's just an incredible history, and they have just been around for the longest time. They're so incredible. The mission in their work is to end the use of animals in science through education, advocacy, and the development of alternative methods. And because of you, and because of the work AAVS is doing, they're giving us the opportunity to help ban the use of animals in testing cosmetics and their ingredients, as well as banning the sale of cosmetic products containing animal-tested ingredients. This is a bill that has been introduced into Congress, and it's called the Humane Cosmetics Act. And we want everyone to go to aavs.org/Humane Cosmetics Act. You can also find it if you just don't remember that, and go to aavs.org, type in your address, and you will be able to directly contact your congresspeople and encourage them to say yes to the Humane Cosmetics Act. So please go there today. I'm going to talk today about the importance of legislation and changes in legislation for animals and how every voice is needed. Every single voice is needed. So please go to aavs.org/Humane Cosmetics Act. And thank you also to Fake Meats, fakemeats.com, for sponsoring today's episode. They are a family-owned vegetarian business, and Stephen and Kim have founded Fake Meats, so you can enjoy a huge selection of vegan meats. Let me tell you something, being an entrepreneur ain't easy. Ain't easy at all. Just doing your own thing and being in charge of every single aspect of the business, it's really challenging and rewarding, but it's challenging. And, you know, people do it because they really feel compelled to do it, to fill a need for people. And certainly that's what Stephen and Kim are doing for all of us. And they feature the popular brands you're familiar with and some that you've probably never heard of, which is fantastic. They have a huge selection of vegan jerky and vegan meats and egg replacers and seasonings and sauces. They have great gift items and holiday baskets. So you can get a wonderful gift for people who've never had vegan jerky before, or vegan meats, or, you know, just give them a little package of vegan everything. And they have vegan gravy mixes and bouillons and recipe packets and gift baskets. So go check out fakemeats.com and certainly follow them on Facebook and Twitter as well. That's where they're really putting out a lot of alerts for specials and sales. But you get a bonus because every time you order $20 or more, which is not that much, it's a really low price point, you get 15% off of every order for $20 or more. That's $3 off a $20 order, which is pretty significant. So go to fakemeats.com, type in podcast14 as your coupon code, and experience your savings and experience some delicious vegan jerky. So fakemeats.com. So I said it's been a rough time. It's been an especially rough week. It was an incredibly intense week. One of the reasons it was an intense week is because there was an ordinance put forth between the Oakland City Council to ban bull hooks on elephants in Oakland. So the idea is that bull hooks, if people don't know what bull hooks are, my husband was actually really cute because he's like, they're not bulls, but they don't use bull hooks on bulls. And I'm like, well, male elephants are bulls. So that's where the name comes from. It's also called an ankus, and it's been used for centuries, to be honest with you. It was invented, I guess, in India, when people started exploiting elephants in India to use for riding and entertainment and work. And so it's called a goad, or a guide, they call it. I don't like the word guide. That's a little euphemistic to me. And the idea is that it has a sharp hook on it, and it's used to cause pain to the elephants so that you can control them and get them to do what you want. So it's part of a larger plan to regulate the treatment of circus animals in Oakland. An ordinance to ban the use of bull hooks on elephants was brought before the city council earlier than expected. They were supposed to bring this ordinance forth to the city council, they being one of the city council members, before June 2015. And so they brought it up a lot earlier than that, which is really exciting. And it cannot be overstated how much this was due to the commitment and compassion of three city council members, especially city council member Dan Kalb, Noel Gallo, and Libby Schaff. Libby Schaff is also the mayor-elect. She will be our new mayor starting January 2015, which is super exciting for all of us who voted for her and who know her well and who know her stance on animal issues. And she is a fantastic friend of the animals here in Oakland. And she has two kitties that she adopted from the Oakland City Shelter. And she's just fantastic. And I just adore her. So she has done a lot for, well, for the people and for animals in Oakland. And so these three council members really understood just the basic morality behind this ban. And they worked really hard to make sure this ordinance passed. And so I really encourage anybody who's listening to this, I don't care where you are, just write to them and thank them. You can go to my website, joyfulvegan.com. You can find the blog post under blog about this, and you can get their specific email addresses from there. So please thank them for what they've done to create compassion in Oakland, specifically around animals. Now, as I say in that blog post, The main opponents of the bill were the people who gained the most, namely those who exploit animals for human pleasure. So Feld Entertainment, who's the owner of Ringling Brothers Circus, whatever their full name is now, I don't care. They had originally threatened to pull all of their shows. So of course, Feld Entertainment has other shows like Disney on Ice and Motocross or something like that, that they bring to the Oakland Arena. And they threatened to pull all of their shows from Oakland. And then, of course, that threatens jobs of union workers and it threatens revenue to the city. And so labor organizers had really been voicing their concern about what this ban would mean for them. And they were quite, you know, justifiably concerned, really, really concerned. And so this had been happening. This was put forth. It was already passed by a committee, a public safety committee, the week before. And so now it was brought before the full city council on this past Tuesday night. And there were quiet conversations, of course, all of the politics that happened behind the scenes. And in the end, an amendment to the ordinance, this happened at the city council meeting, was put forth by council member Rebecca Kaplan that pushes back the ban to 2017. That was what was done in the city of Los Angeles that passed the same ban. So they were modeling Los Angeles. So there were a lot of activists who were responsible for this. I certainly had nothing to do with putting it forth in front of the city council. Many, many, many people were working on this. And again, it really, really was thanks to Libby Schaff, who brought it up originally back, I don't think it was quite a year ago, and then city council member Gallo. And Kolb, like I said, Dan Kolb was really instrumental in bringing this before the city council. So once Rebecca Kaplan at the city council meeting brought forth the amendment saying that the ban wouldn't be enacted until 2017, just like what was done in Los Angeles, this alleviated any concerns about immediate loss of jobs, which is what was concerning the union workers. And then in addition, Feld Entertainment committed to pulling only the circus itself out of Oakland because, of course, they can't provide entertainment without torturing animals. They can't have animals in their circus without torturing them. So if they can't use a bullhook, then they're not going to come. So great, don't come. That's your choice. And so they just committed to pulling the circus, not all the non-animal events. And so with these two developments, it was clear early on that the ordinance was going to pass. And so, you know, the concern was that the union, obviously before those developments, it was a big concern that the unions were getting all of their people out there and there wouldn't be any way to get into the chamber ourselves to be able to comment and speak to the city council. So my comrade, Tim Anderson, my good friend, who you hear me thank all the time for his support, we arrived at around 5 o'clock and the meeting itself, the council meeting, started at 5:30. So we and the 100 plus activists were there to speak on behalf of animals. And we knew that it was going to be several hours before our agenda item came up, but we needed to get there to, you know, secure a seat. So I brought my laptop and I got a lot of work done while I was sitting there listening to lots of other items. And several hours later, the agenda item came up. And I really do find the legislative process really fascinating. Frankly, I learn a lot from Tim because he's quite interested in all of this. And I have, I think, some things to say, and perhaps in a different episode, on how animal advocates can learn a lot more about how to adeptly work the legislative process. But the democratic process was in full force that night, and I am really impressed when I see these city council members who sign up for this. They sign up for this, listened to every single comment given. Well, I don't think they were all listening intently. A lot of them are checking their phones and doing other things, but they're there to listen to the public. And I'm just really fascinated by that. I think advocates, again, I think there's a lot to learn. I think there's a difference, and advocates need to learn the difference between what kind of energy and what kind of tactics you use when you're protesting versus when you're sitting in during a legislative process or you're in a, you know, a council chamber or you're in any kind of legislative chamber. There's a difference. And I think it would behoove activists to really understand the difference between the two. And I do think legislative changes are vital to changing the world for animals. So I'll say more about that another time. And I'm excited about some things that Tim and I are talking about to create that opportunity for advocates in Oakland. So more on that another time. But we were there and a lot of comments. And of course, the Feld Entertainment folks were there, you know, and people who use bullhooks on elephants were there defending their practice. I was uninterested in their defense because I knew that's what they were going to say and do. And like nothing they said surprised me. What really touched me were the union workers who really were genuinely concerned about their jobs. And I think a lot of animal advocates just looked at them as the enemy as well. None of that came out in anybody's comments, but I think there was this us and them mentality, which happens all the time. And the us was the animal advocates and the them was both the union workers as well as the circus owners. And they are not the same at all. They are not the same. These are workers who are genuinely concerned about their jobs and who, these aren't people who are beating the animals, by the way. These aren't people who work for the circus. These are people who work in the Coliseum. They might be janitors. They might be food service workers, just a number of different workers for the Coliseum, for the events space. And they're genuinely concerned about their jobs. And so there was less of a union presence once it was clear that Feld was going to work with the city and not just pull all of their events out of the city, because that's what would have really created a lot of job loss for the union workers. Once that became clear, there wasn't the urgency that there was initially for them to speak out against this ban. Yet there were still union workers who would come up to the microphone and speak their concerns. And a lot of them were like, I love animals. Like, this isn't about elephants. This isn't about me wanting there to be pain inflicted upon elephants. I'm just really concerned about my jobs. But there was less urgency, as I said, because by then it was clear that Feld Entertainment was not going to pull all of their events out, just the circus. So I remember one time there was this sweet, sweet woman speaking about her concerns and her family was right behind her. And one of the animal advocates next to me said, gosh, I almost feel sorry for them. And I said, well, we should feel sorry for them. This is real for them. These are real fears for them that we can't identify with, or I know I can't identify with. There's nothing that's happening, you know, an outside threat to my livelihood to feed my family. That's not the position I'm in. And I absolutely do sympathize with that position. So we do need to understand that injustice is injustice. And Feld Entertainment was holding these jobs captive, was really threatening the lives and the jobs of these folks. It wasn't the animal advocates. They were being unfairly threatened. And so, yes, we need to have sympathy for the people in that position. So that was the right response to have. Anyway, at 12:40 a.m., so this was after midnight, so we got there at 5 p.m., and at 12:40 a.m., the ban was passed. And Kalb and Gayo spoke eloquently and passionately about the significance of this ban. And they, along with Schaff, no surprise, and then Pat Kernahan and Rebecca Kaplan, two other city council members, they also provided the 5 votes total to pass this ban. And again, they should be thanked as well. Pat Kernahan is going out. Her term is up. And so she's not going to be here for the next term. Rebecca Kaplan will be. And just a number of them had really lovely things to say. Libby Schaff said, this is just the right thing to do. It's just that simple. Council member Noel Gayo said, I don't need to have an elephant stand on one leg to see how cute he looks. I don't learn about the elephants over at the circus while I'm sitting there entertained. That's a show. Councilmember Dan Kalb, who I've said a number of times was incredible through this whole process, he said, I'm convinced beyond any doubt in my mind that the bullhook is used often enough that we are right to ban it. And at the very end, when she was giving the last push and the last bit of argument for passing the ban and really urging the council members to do so, Mayor Jean Kwan, who I said is going out and Libby Schaff is coming in, she said, I'm convinced we're going to move to a time when there won't be any elephants in circuses, you know, and then ... But now at least we have something, let's do something to help. And I love that because I really do believe that there will come a time where we're not going to have animals in circuses. We will absolutely have that time. I do not doubt it at all. And possibly in my lifetime, if I keep alive. So of course, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, they announced that they're going to stop coming to Oakland in 2018, because that's going to be right after the ban. They're, of course, going to be trying to convince the new city council, which will have 2 new city council members, to reverse the ban. Of course, they're going to work hard to reverse it. So we'll have to stay on top of this. But by the time I spoke, as I said, I knew the ban was going to pass. But I was really eager to share my thoughts with the city council because I had something to say about Oakland's most iconic figure, Jack London, and his legacy of speaking up for the animals, specifically for circus animals. So if you would like to hear what I presented to the council, you can listen on and I'll just read to you my letter. Well, it was my letter. It was my comment. It was what I was saying in person to the city council. And if you don't know who Jack London is, I don't know what to say to you. Jack London was an American author, quite an adventurer, quite a exciting life he led. Certainly an imperfect human being by all accounts, and sadly suffered from alcoholism, and that's ultimately what killed him. But he wrote several books, including White Fang, and just blanking on completely on other books that he wrote that you know very well. Seawolf was also one of them, right? I am completely blanking. What was the big one? Anyway, and so he lived in Oakland for a time. And so there's a whole section of Oakland called Jack London Square. And there's a statue of him. And the bar, the dive that he used to drink in has now been kind of become this very hip place to go down at Jack London Square. So he's a huge iconic figure in our city, and I really wanted them to hear what I had to say about it. So I will read you what I said to them. I said, dear council members and Mayor Kwan, who at that point was still there, yes. And I said, many people think Oakland is a city defined by violence, and this ordinance before you is one way to demonstrate that it's not. This ordinance would, quote, prohibit the use of the ankus, axe handle, baseball bat, or pitchfork on elephants in Oakland. That is what was in the ordinance, by the way. If you think I'm kidding, no, they have to be specific and say that you cannot use a baseball bat or pitchfork on elephants in Oakland because they have been used, both in the zoo and the circus. For the record, Oakland Zoo does not use the ankus, does not use the bullhook anymore. They used to, and certainly they probably at one point used other weapons as well, but they were there in defense of the ban. So the Oakland Zoo, which I'm not supporting the zoo, I'm not supporting elephants in the zoo, but they were there, which was fantastic, to support the ban. So that's just a little FYI about the use of the bullhook in other instances of Oakland. And it's not just the circus that comes to town, there's other instances as well, which in many cities would be the zoo. So this ordinance would prohibit the use of the ankus, axe handle, baseball bat, and pitchfork on elephants in Oakland. There's nothing ambiguous about that. It's clear, it's reasonable, and it reflects nonviolence. These instruments are used solely to cause pain and intimidation to control intelligent and sensitive animals. And although they may not be using a bullhook or a baseball bat, Feld Entertainment is using fear, intimidation, and threats to persuade you, the public, and workers in Oakland that without these instruments of pain, they will pull all of their shows from Oakland. And let's be clear, it's not you, the public, or any of us who care about the humane treatment of animals who would be responsible for Feld Entertainment withdrawing from Oakland and thus causing people to lose their jobs and our city to lose revenue. It's Feld Entertainment who would be responsible. They're the ones threatening to jeopardize workers' livelihoods by refusing to modify their inhumane practices toward elephants. If they can't find a way to provide entertainment without torturing animals, then they're not welcome in our city. Not because we told them not to come, but because they chose not to come. And make no mistake about it, we're not the first residents of Oakland to express concern about the treatment of circus animals. 100 years ago, after witnessing the abuse that takes place against performing animals in circuses, our most iconic figure, our own Jack London, author and social activist, wrote two novels, Jerry of the Islands and Michael, Brother of Jerry, to spread awareness to the public about performing animals. In the foreword for these novels, he wrote, "I have a strong stomach and a hard head, but what turns my head and makes my gorge rise is the cold-blooded, conscious, deliberate cruelty and torment that is manifest behind 99 of every 100 trained animal turns. Cruelty, as a fine art, has attained its perfect flower in the trained animal world." Because of the awareness he created, the public spoke up, just as we're doing tonight. And in 1925, Ringling Barnum and Bailey Circus withdrew all trained animal acts from their performance schedules and remained animal-free for almost 5 years. So we know they're capable of hearing and responding to the public. There are plenty of companies Oakland can reach out to that have chosen not to include animals or weapons in order to provide family entertainment in Oakland. Surely Oakland can find a way to provide public entertainment that doesn't reflect cruelty and violence, that doesn't make cruelty a fine art. With this ordinance before you, which I urge you to pass, Oakland has an opportunity to reflect its own values of compassion and nonviolence and do today what Oakland's own Jack London knew was the right thing to do 100 years ago: protect animals from unnecessary cruelty. Thank you. So my words probably had nothing to do. I don't even know if they fell on deaf ears, but I really wanted to get that out there. And as I said, it did nothing to persuade anyone because we knew we had the 5 votes from those folks before I spoke. But I was really, really excited about letting them know about Jack London and his legacy protecting animals. And so I'm really proud of Jack London's legacy and his history and his words. And so you can check out those novels. You can find them online for sure. And one of the things that was really painful for me during this process was, and I really have no right to complain about being hungry because we're talking about elephants being stabbed with a hook, but I was so hungry because I had woken up. I was so hungry and tired because the night before I had woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning because I was writing in my head what I wanted to say to the city council. And that's when I was inspired to write about Jack London because I remembered about Jack London and these Jack London clubs that had grown up in response to Jack London's concern. Sadly, Jack London never saw the 5 years that circuses were animal free. He had died prior to that. However, I had woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning and started writing. And so I'd woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And then here we are. I got home at 1 o'clock in the morning from the meeting. And I was so hungry and I did not bring food with me. And I was so tired, but it was definitely worth it because sometimes your inspiration just comes to you in the middle of the night and you have to go with it. And so I did. And so this was a victory. It absolutely is a victory, no doubt about it. What LA experienced also is, you know, what's happening is that when you can at least just ban this weapon, then the circus doesn't come to town. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to other towns. That doesn't mean that at all. But it is significant in the sense that because they can't have trained animals without inflicting pain and fear on them, and in this case, with a bullhook, specifically with this particular weapon, that means they can't come to town because it would be illegal for them to use the bullhook. So it's a victory, but I do think it's a small victory. What we really want to do is follow in the steps of the countries who are passing much more progressive laws than we are. On the day I wrote this, Mexico's Congress approved a new measure to ban animal circuses nationwide. Mexico is a huge country. So we're talking about 592 circuses operating around the country in Mexico. So they banned animals in circuses nationwide. And this is a government that's, you know, look, Mexico is not known for its, look, there's corruption in Mexico in the government, which is really horrific and really affecting the lives of many Mexicans. And so it's pretty impressive when you look at this Congress that approves a measure to ban animal circuses. And it's so impressive. And yet we have to do these little, you know, town by town, city by city, banning a bullhook, when what we should really be doing, like Mayor Gene Kwan said, is just abolishing animals and circuses altogether. We know it's going to happen. Like, why do we have to go through these steps? We know it's going to happen. And as government officials in Mexico said that the passage of the ban, it's not intended to put circuses out of business, but to have them continue without affecting other species. And that's really the bottom line. Be creative, be innovative, continue doing all the other parts of your show that don't inflict pain and torture on animals, i.e. have them in the circus. So just remove them from the circus and still do your wonderful performances. Obviously, like Cirque du Soleil, you know, that's a perfect example of how people are just filling those seats to see these incredible performances and acrobats doing their thing without any animals. So that's really the future. I'm convinced it is. If you are interested in putting forth any kind of ban like this, putting forth a ban on bullhooks, if you want to use the same model that LA used, I can put you in touch with the activist who worked really hard in LA and who even came up to Oakland for this meeting and who were instrumental in getting this ban passed in Oakland. And the city council in Oakland was very clear that they were modeling themselves after LA. So that's really a model we can use. And again, I know it's so hard to understand what this legislative process is like, but there's no need to reinvent the wheel. So I would recommend getting in touch with advocates who've already done this, who already know the process. One of the things that I know was really helpful was the president of the city council in LA wrote a letter to the city council in Oakland and told them how positive this was and how they can do it without affecting jobs and that kind of thing. And so I'm certain you can replicate that in other cities. So if you are interested, please email me, go to joyfulvegan.com and email me, and I will put you in touch with the advocates who've done this work and who are continuing to do this work. So thank you to all of them and to everybody who speaks out for animals. It was an incredible night watching so much compassion and so much passion for animals. So I'm going to take a little break. And when we come back, we'll get right to our WWCPGD calls. I have a few. And before I do, again, I want to remind you to please support this podcast by going to joyfulvegan.com. either becoming a sustaining supporter or a one-time contributor. And thank you to AAVS.org for the work they're doing to protect animals from harm. And I want to urge you to support their hard work. Go to AAVS.org/Humane Cosmetics Act. Ask your congresspeople to support the Humane Cosmetics Act. Get involved in the legislative process. And thank you also to FakeMeats.com for supporting this episode. They sell the popular brands of vegan jerky, vegan meats, egg replacers, seasonings and sauces, great holiday and gift items. And you can get 15% off, $3 off every time you spend $20 at FakeMeats.com by using the code PODCAST14. So now a little music from Gösta Berling. Thank you, Gösta Berling, for providing beautiful music. You can go to GöstaBerling.com. You can also purchase these tracks individually or the albums by going to JoyfulVegan.com under shop, and you can buy my husband's album because they're really good. I am so excited for their new LP that's coming out, but right now you can go check out their other EPs and buy their individual songs or their albums. So this is our time together, of course, for me to answer your questions directly. You can call in, and I really encourage you guys to call in on Tuesday nights. The calls are really a wonderful way to engage, to ask your question. And frankly, it's a lot easier for me to have an interaction with you to really understand the context of your situation to be able to answer your question. So as much as I invite you to email me, and I do get a lot of emails, it's a little harder for me to answer all of these emails. Of course, Bridie does help me answer them. But if you really want to talk to me directly and get your own question answered and support for your individual situation, do call in on Tuesday nights. I'm naming the night, even though I don't like to do that in case we changed it. But right now it's Tuesday nights from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time. And you can find all the information at joyfulvegan.com. I think it's under contact. So I'm looking forward to sharing these calls with you. I certainly do not have all the answers, but I do have a lot of opinions and I'm happy to share them if you ask. So our first call, oh my goodness, our first call is from Hannah. Really interesting situation. Something we could probably all identify with, I think. Hi, Hannah.
Hi. Is this Colleen?
It is.
Wow, it's so great to talk to you.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm just calling randomly. I saw your post on Instagram. Okay, so I have a question about, like, intervening when there's an animal in need. Mm. Let me tell you a story that was really traumatic for me because I didn't really know what to do. This was several months ago. I was at my husband's family's house, and we're all having dinner, and then we went out to the backyard to have drinks around the fire, and then there was a possum that fell into the yard, and you know, possums are one of those creatures that most people just think are, you know, second class.
Yeah.
And so what happened was they didn't want the dogs to get the possum, so they were kind of, you know, people get kind of like rowdy and they start laughing, and they got a shovel, and they were like trying to pick up the possum, kind of violently putting the possum on the shovel. And I didn't really know what to do because, I mean, possums, I've heard they're, like, a little dangerous. And I'm not great with animals, so I didn't know how to, like, intervene. And I kept saying, like, okay, just don't hurt him, but I also wanted to keep my distance because I was a little scared of the animal. Mm. And then my father-in-law ended up, like, just chucking him over the fence into the neighbor's yard, just like so violently and unnecessarily. And I just said, why did you do that? And I just kind of started to choke up, and then I just left because the whole vegan thing with me and my in-laws is a really sensitive topic. And so yeah, I didn't know what to do in that situation besides yell at them to not hurt the animal.
Yeah, God. So they were trying to get him out of the yard, but in doing so, they were doing it in a rough way, and they couldn't hurt him. But they weren't trying to kill him. They weren't trying to like bludgeon him with the shovel or anything like that.
Right. Okay. But if the animal happened to die, then they didn't really care. you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. That's a really hard situation, and it's a really hard thing to witness when you see people, yeah, you know, and love, and, you know, who are an intimate part of your life, do something in a moment like that. I mean, it's kind of like the telltale moment, right? Like, how do you react, yeah, in that moment? Like, who
exactly
are you? Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like you were doing the right thing in terms of being the voice at the moment, saying, be careful, don't hurt him. You know, just,
yeah,
that's absolutely one of the things we can do. There, I have a painting that an animal rights artist made. Her name is Amanda Merkel. God, I haven't thought of her in years. And it's this wonderful painting of, you just see the gun, you see a rifle in the foreground. You don't see, I guess you see a little bit of the person shooting, and then you see a deer beyond, and a person is standing in between them and mm-hmm, protecting the deer. And like, that's an image I have of you in that situation. Just not that you, yeah, put yourself in between them, but you were that voice to say, please don't hurt him, please just be careful. And it sounded like you were of sound mind when you said that, and you weren't like freaking out and yelling. I don't even know. Maybe you were, and that's not a bad thing either. And that's yeah, not a horrible thing. Like, cause all the emotions are heightened in a moment like that.
Yeah.
And then so everything you did is everything right, because there's no way to plan for these kinds of things when emotions are involved. But I think,
right,
the main thing that you did that, you know, it was fantastic, is just being the voice to say, be careful, don't hurt him. Just like, he's just a possum. And
yeah,
I'm imagining the possum was probably pretty docile, because possums really do play dead.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah, how well, yeah, they play.
Yeah.
How well they play dead. And they're, yeah, not really aggressive. I mean, just for your own edification. I mean, they don't bother, you know, they're more afraid of us than probably,
yeah,
we are of them. And that's why they use that defense mechanism.
Yeah, but I remember you told this amazing story. You were traveling somewhere, and yeah, you saw a raccoon that was having like psychological issues, and you were able to take care of the raccoon. And I just don't think I could ever do that, mm-hmm, you know? So like, if it were you and you have experience with these types of animals, would you be able to say, hey, hold on, let me get the possum, let me get some gloves on, and what would you know?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have. So yes, and thanks for remembering that. And yeah, it was an incredible moment, and the people were shocked that there was someone who was going to pick yeah, up this raccoon. And you know, some of it is you have to kind of assess it on a case by case basis. I knew that raccoon was dying and sick, and I knew it was neurological. So I watched him for a few minutes to know that, like, I'm not afraid for myself, and I'm going to put gloves on, and I'm going to take safety precautions. So yeah, in that moment, I probably would have said, guys, calm down, hang on, let's like just relax. First of all, just get the dogs inside.
Yeah.
Next, let's all go inside until the possum goes away. He's playing yeah, dead right now. He's going to go away. So why don't we just move the party inside for just a moment, and then we'll come back. You know,
yeah,
I may have done something like that. You said he fell where? He fell like in the pool? Is that what you said?
No, just on the grass in the backyard from the
fell.
Fence. Yeah.
He just came
over. I was saying after the fact to my husband, like, well, why couldn't we just put the possum in the front yard gently? Like, okay, put him on the shovel, whatever. That's not how I would have done it, but put him on the shovel, put him in the front yard where there are no dogs, and then the possum can scurry away and go wherever he wants.
For sure. And that's, you know, so there's kind of like, how do we behave during, and how do we behave like, you know, after, right? So,
yeah.
So during, it sounds like you were trying to be the voice of compassion and saying, hey guys, just, you know, just be careful. Don't hurt him. And then
yeah,
when they did what they did, you know, it's so frustrating to me to hear you say, you know, I was upset, and I was just really upset what they did, and because of my vegan thing. It's like, because you're compassionate. Like, I mean, you're
yeah,
just, like, you know, so you had emotions, and you were upset by it. And I know it's hard, because you want them to understand on a level that doesn't discount how you're reacting, and write it off as some kind of emotional, you know,
yeah,
frou-frou thing. And yet you're that's the most beautiful reaction, is to cry because someone else could be hurt. I mean, that's just
yeah,
so gorgeous. And so you know, again, I don't want you to feel like you did anything wrong. Of course, you know, that's what we're always holding. We're always holding how we react viscerally and how we want to be the best advocate so people kind of have a change of heart, right? So that's kind of what we struggle with. And so, okay, so maybe we're not 100% every time because we're emotional and that's okay. But, you know, if there's ever, so what I did as the follow-up with the people who were reacting so emotionally to the raccoon. Now, I know it's a different story because these are your in-laws, but, you know, there might be something you can glean from this is what I did the next day. So I had taken the raccoon, you know, like an hour's drive in this, you know, I didn't know where I was. I was in Florida somewhere. Yeah. And I, you know, and I knew he was going to, I know he was euthanized. I found out the next day because he had distemper. And so I went back the next day to the house and I had a phone, I had phone numbers of animal control and just animal, I don't think it was animal control actually, because that's who they called. And of course, animal control doesn't come. They, I gave them the number of some wildlife rehabilitators. And so that in the future, if there's ever a situation like that, that they knew who to call rather than just like letting the animal sit there for 8 hours, which is what they did. So maybe there's something similar with your pair, with your in-laws where you might say, I don't know, maybe it's just information like, hey, that was such a weird thing. And by the way, I did some research on possums and I think, you know, I know he probably could have been hurt, maybe, you know, but he was probably just playing dead. Their defense mechanism is so amazing. Maybe, how would we handle it next time? I don't know. I mean, it depends on how interested they are.
Yeah, definitely. And just to bring up real quick, Colleen, because it's another topic, but like, so I'm 26 and when I was 18, I became like plant-based and I was called myself a vegan, but, I often cheated and stuff and it was only for my health. And if anyone ever said, you do it for the animals, I said, no, you're just completely distancing myself from animal activists. And then 2 years ago, suddenly I had a change of heart from something a YouTuber said. And all of a sudden my whole worldview changes. And that's when the problems begin with my husband and my in-laws and my friends, when they say, oh, well, now you're doing it for the animals. Now it's a problem.
Right.
It's so interesting.
Have you listened to the episodes, on, the stages that I've been talking about?
Yes.
Cause that's exactly, I mean, like I said, they all want to conspire to keep us asleep. And even though you could have already been doing it and eating plant-based, it still doesn't mean you weren't threatening anybody and now you're threatening everybody. And so you're there again, the power of the vegan in the room is you're there as the voice of compassion in all of your fullness. And that's really scary for people because what you're reflecting back is a moment of cruelty that they're participating in. And that makes people really uncomfortable. It's like when you say, you know, if you say to someone, you know, that sounded really racist. And they go, I'm not racist. Like, you know, like they just like their defensiveness is just so clear at that moment. And so what you're doing is mirroring back to them. And all they want to say is, I'm not cruel. I'm a good person. Mm-hmm. And that's where we have to hold both, right? Yes, you are a good person. And I'm not in any way implying that you're not a good person, but we're all scared at that moment. And maybe there's a better way we could handle it. And so, you know, it just depends on how, if you want to revisit it with them or just kind of learn some skills for the next time something like that happens.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. That was really helpful.
Oh, I hope so.
Not be afraid to be more vocal next time a possum falls in the yard.
Yeah. And but, it's hilarious that he would just be falling in the yard, first of all. And you don't have to, it doesn't mean you have to be the person who puts on the gloves and picks up the possum. So like, you don't feel like you had to do that. And that would, you know, in another circumstance, I wouldn't have done that. So just, I like the idea of kind of removing the threats from the situation, which were the dogs and the people. So let's give the possum some space and let's go this way. And it might mean you physically taking the shovel out of someone's hand. Perhaps it does. I don't know. It depends on how much you had to drink. So next time, let me know what happens.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, okay. Well, let me say thanks again. You're a huge inspiration for me and you're a big part of my journey to awakening. And I think I'm going to start a podcast soon.
Oh, so, very cool.
Yeah, I'll join you on the podcast ranks.
I love it, Hannah. Keep me posted. That's fantastic.
I will.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Hannah. I'm so sympathetic to you in that situation. I know it's so hard. And I really appreciate that Hannah was really honest about, you know, like she doesn't know how to deal with a possum. You know, who knows what to do, right? I mean, we can be intimidated by non-human animals as well, rightfully so. You know, they want us to stay away from them. And so they have different tactics and techniques to keep us away from them, to keep them safe. And they can be intimidating. And so we're not all, you know, animal biologists or experts to be able to interact with them in a way that's safe and that is good for them and good for you. So I really appreciate that. You know, what do you do? Like, how do you deal with that? In that situation that I talked about with that raccoon, you know, I would maybe handle it differently another time. I mean, that was a situation where I really trusted that that raccoon needed my help at that moment. And I was not afraid to pick him up and put him in a box and bring him to a place that was going to alleviate his suffering. I was not concerned at all. So we have to read the situations differently depending on the context. So anyway, thank you, Hannah. I really appreciate your support and your compassion. The second call is from Dolly, who is so, so sweet, had left me a voicemail, just this beautiful voicemail. And then she called again and got me during the session for our call. So here's her sweet, sweet call.
Hi, Colleen. My name is Dolly. I'm from Texas. I can't believe I'm talking to you.
You're so sweet. I think you're the one who left the voicemail earlier, aren't you?
Yes, yes.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you in Texas?
Great. Your words touch me every day, and you're so inspiring, and I feel you in my heart.
You're so sweet.
I really do, and I don't know where to start, Colleen. I have so much. I mean, I went through all your stuff, and I went through that, the grieving and the anger. And yesterday I went to a farm sanctuary, and wow, it was the most meaningful. It was just, I kind of saw the light. Mm. And they all had names, and, you know, just touching them and being with them, it was just beautiful.
Mm. Which farm sanctuary did you go to?
It was called Dreamtime, because it was very hard here in Texas to find one, first of all.
Yeah, tell me the name again.
Dreamtime Sanctuary.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not familiar with them.
Well, she was an elderly lady and close to Austin, and she was by herself and taking care of all these animals. I wish I was closer. I would volunteer. Mm. But then, you know, I posted some pictures on my WhatsApp with my family, and my mom, of course, gave me such good, you know, feedback. Mm. And, you know, one of my cousins was like, did you get to see a turkey? And unfortunately, I didn't. And she's like, well, I pass by turkey sometime on the road, and they're just so stupid. Mm. And I was just like, how could she do that? How could she? You know, I'm so sensitive now.
Yeah.
And family members are just, you know, they're supposed to be my cousins, and they're just, I feel like people are insensitive.
I wonder if, you know, I hear a lot from people who talk about what it's like with family, and I know, you know, I know I'm there too, but I wonder if family, it feels even more visceral with family because they feel like they can go there. You know, they feel like they can cross the line more. So from our perspective, we say, gosh, family's the one who's supposed to be even kinder and more sensitive to us. And they're the ones who make these jabs at us. But I wonder if that's because they're family and they feel that they can make those jabs at us or say those kinds of things or say those insensitive remarks. I mean, they're like everybody else. You know, I'm sure I made insensitive remarks too at some point, but, I just wonder sometimes if family, if it feels different with family because they do feel like they can go there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like my husband says, take the high road.
Yeah.
You know, everything that you're doing is wonderful. And now I'm very spiritual and I have a healing tree. The whole thing started was, I go to my healing tree every day.
Mm.
And I ask him, you know, make my heart bigger and bigger and let it multiply and let me be healthy. And I got started into juicing. And after I started juicing, I bumped into some videos and I was so scared. I mean, my knees would shake. And I'm born Hindu. You know, I grew up in a family where we were kind of vegetarian anyway.
Mm.
And I was thinking to myself, wow, like, I love my dog so much. I mean, I love animals. I've raised two ducks here at my lake.
Mm.
And I love them so much. And I'm so happy to say, you know, my kids are basically vegetarian. My husband's even not eating meat in so long. I'm 100% vegan. Mm. And I just feel like the healing tree has just brought, Mother Earth has just given me so much. Mm. And now I ask Mother Earth every day, I want to be a voice for these. I want to do more than just be, you know, mm-hmm. not eat animals anymore. I want to do something. And so I want to stop dairy at schools, at least the two schools that my kids go to school to.
Okay.
And I called PCRM and they told me, okay, do this. And you can write a letter to your officials and write a letter to the principal. And then later I came to find out that dairy is like, they have to carry dairy. And I also wanted your advice on all that, but they said that maybe you can, you know, have them bring soy milk, but they won't take out dairy. And now I'm thinking they should just make it plant-based because some schools are plant-based.
Yeah, well, I would use as a model, of course, anybody that you can use as a model for the same work you want to do in these schools, I would look to other schools who've done that. There have been a couple. There are a couple. I know there's a New York City school.
Yes.
For instance, right? So I would definitely look to those institutions and activists who've already done this work so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, because my daughter, like last summer, she got, her cholesterol was high.
Mm.
And I was like, what? You know, she's only 13 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And we eat Indian food. We eat healthy at home. And, you know, it goes to show, like, when she's with her friends or at school lunches, they're really not that healthy. And I'm a parent who's concerned, everyone. And how could we be giving dairy to our children? It's such an injustice.
Yeah. No, it's great. No, sorry, my phone's ringing. You've got the passion, you've got the information, and you've got the legitimate claim since your daughter goes to that school. I think that's a really good question. I support you, obviously.
Thank you.
For sure. And yeah, it's a question that needs to be asked of people who've never thought about it before. And I think I would just encourage you to keep that in mind. You know, you're going up against a paradigm that has been in place for a long, long time that is entrenched in our society and in our thinking. And
yes.
I support you 100% and want you to go for it and just try and keep that in mind when you meet resistance, because you will. And,
yes.
And it's, you know, it's very threatening to consider change, and it's threatening to consider change in something like this that's so entrenched. So just try and keep that in mind when you're working on this with the folks who you're going to be communicating with.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's kind of hard in Texas. They have the chicken fried steaks and,
yeah.
It's very hard in Texas, but, if parents knew, if they only knew where this is coming from, what an injustice it is, like you say, you know, America has the most cholesterol, and kids as young as 9 are taking medication for cholesterol. There's no need for it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing you might want to look into is I know there's some really compelling studies specifically on the fact that what we feed our children, it has such a long-term effect on the health of them in the future. So I think, you know, going at it from that angle as well, I think is really, really helpful. I think finding those studies, I know Joel Fuhrman referenced that particular study or those studies. I don't know if it was one in particular, but that is really compelling information for me. And I think it's compelling information for parents to know that what we feed our children now determines their health as adults. And I think that is something that parents can really wrap their heads around. And
so
those are the kinds of things that I think are going to really support the cause for you when you can present them with this kind of information. But you know, you said if they only knew, well, all right, go tell them.
I want to tell them. And I mean, I'm doing it for compassion reasons only. This is just an added benefit for the child's health.
For sure.
You know, but my goal is to be the voice for the animals.
Yeah, for sure. You can do it all. You know, it,
yeah, yeah. And even yesterday, when my children were there, you know, I wanted to make, I wanted them to feel that connection with these beautiful pigs and lambs and goats. And I just hope, you know, I think it touched them because my daughter's like, you know, can we have pigs and goats? And I'm like, someday, someday, Rosie, I want to open up a sanctuary myself.
That's great. That's fantastic, Colleen.
So, yeah. That's Thank you, wonderful. Colleen, for your time. And I'd love to talk to you again. And you are the most, you're so well-read, the way you speak. Yeah, I try to memorize because I'm going to be going to Thanksgiving dinner and how to talk about that protein and the iron. And I just love the way you talk. And I just can't believe I'm talking to you. Oh, it's such an honor.
You're so sweet. You when I listen to your message for those who are listening to this, because I'll air this on the podcast, Dolly left me just an incredibly loving voicemail, and it really just brought tears to my eyes. And I feel so honored to do this work and to get the response from people like you. You have to know that it just means so much to me, because there are days that I can feel, you know, just, you know, you just start to feel, is anybody out there? Is anybody listening? And to hear your message just really confirmed it for me. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And yesterday when I met these animals, it was their love that let me talk to you today. It was them who did it, and it's them who are going to be able to let me do something big, something huge. Their love will be so powerful. It's going to be all them.
Yeah, I hear you. I love it. And
thank you so much. And have a great Thanksgiving.
You as well.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Dolly. You're just too much. It's too much. Okay, that's all I have, folks. I thank you again for listening. Get out there and go speak out for the animals in whatever context works for you, in what way makes sense for you. There's so many ways to do so. Certainly, you can get involved with a legislative process. You can write letters. You can create recipes. You can write articles. You can whatever. I mean, there's so many ways to get involved. And I do think us getting involved legislatively is important, as I keep talking about. And if you like what you've heard, please post a review on iTunes and Stitcher and support this work if you can. As I said, go to joyfulvegan.com and support the podcast, and also go to the contact page where you can find out about calling in on Tuesday nights and have your own call included on this podcast. It's an honor to do this work, and I'm really grateful you enable me to do so and that you keep listening. Over 8 years later, we're moving into our 9th year doing the podcast, which is pretty amazing. So I'm really grateful. Check out joyfulvegan.com for my podcast, my books, my videos on YouTube. I really need your help kind of increasing the views over on the YouTube channel. And by the way, if you don't know, a lot of these vegan POV episodes, and I will talk about this more in the next episode, have closed caption, first of all, but they also have been translated to have subtitles in different languages. So we've got Spanish over there. We've got French. We've got Slovak. We're working on German. We'd love to hear from more people who want to help us do translations for these vegan POV episodes in German, in Vietnamese, in Thai, in Indonesian. I mean, we've got so much potential to be able to spread my message of compassion to the world and in their language, obviously. So go check out Colleen Patrick Goudreau TV at my YouTube channel. And thank you for all you do. I'm so grateful to you and to AAVS and fakemeats.com and for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick Goudreau. Thanks for listening.